Thank you for joining us today. My name is Divya Ravikumar Grant, and I'm a member of the Equality, Diversity and Inclusion Committee in the University of Galway. So we're doing this podcast in order to share experiences from the speech and language therapy community. And today we have Tom Costello, who's going to talk to us about what it was like for him coming through his course and also what it was like or what it is like in the profession of speech and language therapy for him. So Tom, why did you choose speech and language therapy?
Hi, Divya. Well, I didn't really know what speech and language therapy was, to be honest, when I started the course. Probably not for about 6 months or a year into the course did I get a full grasp. I kind of fell into it, really. When I was about 16, I started helping out with my neighbour who has quadriplegic cerebral palsy. He's a neighbour and friend of mine who's about 3 or 4 years younger than me. So when I was 16 or 17, he was 13 or 14, and he was one of the first people in Ireland, or certainly around where I was, to use eye gaze communication device. And so I was helping out with him and eventually working with Enable Ireland throughout college, kind of helping out with him and others with similar conditions. And so I got a real interest in, I would be quite interested in technology. So I had got a real interest in AAC. And then I thought, oh, well, who helps this? And I found out it was a speech and language therapist. And I thought, that sounds great. And then I did the course and found out that that's a teeny, teeny, tiny part of the
Oh,
job.
isn't that always the way? And I feel like that happens to a lot of people, especially in kind of healthcare related courses, because I feel like it's difficult to get a breakdown of what everything is. But with some of the allied health courses, like, I even for me, I had no idea what dietetics was before I went in either. Like, I really didn't understand. I understood a very, very tiny portion of what it was going to be, and then it was completely different. And I loved it, but it was for different reasons. I think as well with what you're saying about your experience, it's really interesting because the other person I spoke to as well has also mentioned that it was a specific experience with a specific person that actually got them into speech and language therapy. It was seeing kind of from a practical point of view how you might be affected or like by a speech and language therapist in terms of your everyday life, your quality of life, improving those things. So it's interesting to hear that it was kind of a very specific experience for you as well that brought you into it because did you feel like before that you had heard anything about the course or you knew anything about what speech and language therapists do?
Not really, no. My mum was a nurse and my dad was an ambulance driver, as it was at the time. So very much care professions, and I always knew I wanted to work with kids. I'm still a pediatric speech and language therapist. So those were kind of bits I knew I wanted to get from whatever course or profession I ended up doing. And with the way the leave and cert system is in Ireland, you're kind of almost looking at like a menu. Oh, I should be getting this amount of points. What courses are there? In hindsight, I might have done a more general course, but at the time, I was kind of looking at the options, and I liked the sound of speech and language therapy. And then, as I said, when I was working with Daniel, and I heard that the speech and language therapist had this kind of cool eye gaze device and setting it up, I thought, okay, that's a bit of me, and went from there. And I, when I found out then in the course, it wasn't exactly what I thought it was. I mean, there was a time that I didn't think I would maybe go on and become a speech and language therapist, but then it is a very, very, like, there's a lot of variety in the profession. So I've managed to, I graduated in 2012, so I've managed to find enough within it to kind of keep me interested and engaged.
And did you feel like you'd kind of had to carve out a niche for yourself, like with merging, your love of clearly it's technology and like healthcare, like the idea of kind of those two things coming together? So were there other kind of courses you were looking at too, or was this something where you were like, I'll just dive in head first and see how this goes? Because, I know a bit about it.
Sorry, Tivia, can I just, there's someone behind me here in the room. Can I just stop for 2 seconds?
Of course.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I suppose I'm just kind of wondering. Yeah, I was just saying about your kind of, it seems like from what you're saying, like the technology mixing with, healthcare and helping people was something that potentially appealed to you.
Yeah, so I have since done a master's in digital health transformation, so that's kind of another area
Wow.
that I kind of combine. So my job is a bit of a mishmash of things. And technology is a big part of it. So yeah, no, the technology side of SLT was the one that kind of roped me in, even though I haven't ended up working that much with AAC specifically,
Of course, yeah.
since I qualified.
Yeah, and I do think that's a really interesting master's. Could you tell us what like digital health transformation means?
It's almost like how it sounds. It's a using technology to transform healthcare and areas of healthcare. So, making the processes that we already use in healthcare more efficient and more effective by using a digital solution. So,
Yeah.
it's this huge potential, especially in Ireland, because I think there's so much skill and there's so much. We have so many skilled people when it comes to technology. But our processes are so far behind where they could be. And so there's huge potential for transformation there. So kind of wanted to get involved in that. And I didn't think I'd still be in SLT actually at this point, but I am. I've kind of found ways for now to mind the two interests. So like I won't go off on tangents, but like for example, myself and my colleague here were part of setting up the Learning to Talk series, which is a playlist that people can access online. Really simple 2 and 3 minute videos for helping everyone to support children's early communication development. So like a universal tool that's accessible to all. So that's kind of universal speech and language therapy, but also technology.
That sounds amazing. So learning to talk, is that what it's called?
Yeah, the Learning to
And
Talk series, and the idea is it's little 2 or 3 minute videos, all of a similar kind of template, and there's little clips of parents and kids within them that are Irish and in normal houses, and they're with evidence-based strategies throughout. And this is kind of as we'd love this to be the starting point of eventually a portal where parents can go online and get 2 and 3 minute clips of every part of child development, from things related to dietitians to physical development to from mental health to speech and language.
that's
So
amazing.
yeah, combining the two different interests.
Yeah, so you've kind of found a way to like so carve out a space for yourself and what you're interested in within this field of speech and language therapy. But
Exactly, yeah.
I do think that, yeah, like it seems clear that like what you're saying is that you've kind of built on what you did, but that's also fueling the profession in its own way anyway.
Yeah, I think there's I know something within the HSC. So I'm actually working with ABC START right now, which is under is area based childhood. So it's TUSLA funded. We're working in kind of areas of social deprivation across Ireland. So I'm based in Limerick. So that's not within the HSC umbrella anymore, but I was with the HSC the last few years, and there's a lot of potential for roles like that, but it is, especially within the current climate, maybe tricky to try and innovate, to try and do something that's not being done. It is quite tricky at the moment, but I think there's huge potential there.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And just going back, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about, when you started the course, were you aware when you started speech and language therapy that it was so dominated by females and women?
No idea. I went in on the first day to the induction, and I remember walking into a room of all girls and thinking, have they segregated us? Is there another room?
Yeah.
Am I in the wrong room? But like, a few weeks later I got pretty used to it. My college, so I was the only boy in the class. And most of the teams I've been in, I'd be the only guy in speech and language therapy. Now, when I worked in Scotland, there were a couple more guys in the team. And then a lot of the health centres I'd work in, there might be one or two other guys. So it's primarily you're in the minority. But I don't think it had a huge impact for me. I think the course, it did feel like at times I was in a all-girl secondary school, because speech and language therapy as a course is so almost like a secondary school anyway. It's very intense. It's not like arts or anything where it's very, very loose and flexible.
Yeah, I kind of I think we had a similar college experience. So after, there were 30 of, or 25 to 30 of us, and after I think 2 weeks, the one guy in the course left.
Oh,
So it,
really?
yeah, so it was exactly like secondary school was for me, because I was in an all-girl secondary school. So it really, and like, because it's, the 30 hours a week, you're in there, for the 5 days, 9 to 5 every day, if not a little bit later, depending on some days, you might have a lab or something on. Like, it really was a full, it felt like school for sure in a lot of
And
ways. So
people
yeah.
were signing in. No one could ever sign me into a lecture because I'm 6 foot 3 and I'm a
Yeah,
guy. So.
that's so true. That's actually completely true. Never even thought of that, but the plight of it, yeah, definitely. And in fairness, to be fair, as a person of color in my class, I also had the same thing. I
Yeah,
couldn't find in
you
either.
definitely
Yeah,
also
exactly.
couldn't
Yeah.
just disappear.
Yeah, exactly. And I just was wondering, like, how did that feel? Because, starting college in your first year of college, like, kind of, in terms of making friends, like, that's a tough environment for somebody to come into.
Yeah, I suppose if I lived at home, it might have been trickier. I lived with 3 or 4 lads,
Right, yeah.
so I was surrounded by males in my kind of student accommodation, and then surrounded by my classmates in college, and the courses that we would have engaged with in those first few years, OT and nursing and others, were mainly female dominated as well. To be honest, it never really bothered me at all. I didn't really, I never had another experience, so I
Yes.
didn't know, I didn't have a context to compare it with outside of secondary school. So, as I said, speech and language therapy, a bit like you're describing with your course, is it different to the courses all of my friends were doing anyway? So this was just another difference.
Yeah.
But I very quickly, just met an awful lot of friends within the course, and some of my best friends, my wife was in the course, and some
Oh,
of my best friends were
lovely.
in that course. So, it all worked out.
Yeah, so it's kind of, and like, I suppose when you went into, college, where you were already a fairly, outgoing person, were you chatty, kind of, did you find that that was something you had to work on, or was it something you already had?
I would have been ready for college, and then I remember being quite ready to leave secondary school. My secondary school was not all boys, but it was mixed, but about 80% were boys because of the location of an all-girls school nearby.
Yeah.
So it was again quite different then to move into a pretty much all girls experience in college. But it was, yeah, I would have been pretty social. I think college is often a fresh start for people after the, what can be a tricky social experience of the last few years of secondary school. So I definitely was in, ready for the socialization part of college. That wasn't something that was too tricky
Yeah, that makes
for
sense.
me.
And do you have your, yourself, have you kind of come up with any, I suppose, you joined the course in 2012. Have you any theories as to why allied health is so kind of predominantly female and women dominated?
I think primarily a bit like what you were saying in terms of you need to see it. So definitely, I would put it down to two different things. Number one being, like I work with colleagues in early years professions and lots of teaching colleagues and obviously lots of healthcare colleagues. I don't think it's limited to HPs. Any profession that you work with children, any care profession, there's maybe old kind of cultural stereotype that that's a female's job,
Yes, yeah.
and the vast majority. So I've a few colleagues in early years that would be male, and they would very much be kind of the 1% as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's number one, is that anything related to childcare. Now I know speech, even in speech and language therapy, my experience is that more men go into adult speech and language therapy, even though it's still a very small number. Then Pete, and the second part is like you were describing, you weren't fully sure what a dietitian does. I had no idea what a speech and language therapist did when I chose the course. I think in schools, there could be a lot more around just job education. Like I didn't know what, what did a nurse really do? What did an accountant really do? What did an electrician really do?
Yeah.
I don't think that there's enough focus on actually this is the end point. There's more focus on like just getting into college and figuring it out that way. But maybe there could be a little bit more in just the illuminating of what these life choices, these big choices that you're making, will look like. And also, like if you're not ready to make that choice that you're going to be a speech therapist, what does science look like, or arts look like, or commerce?
Definitely. And I think it's tricky as well because, like, even in terms of understanding the jobs, like, I wished so much after I got into to dietetics, I really wished someone had outlined the different allied health professions and just told me what they were. Like,
Yeah, 100%.
if I had
Yeah.
heard about occupational therapy, I think I would have been so interested in that. You know, there were like things where I was like, I just didn't know that existed until I got to college.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's interesting as well. Like my brother is an occupational therapist, and my cousin Michael is an occupational therapist. There's something within the family where we're choosing professions that are fine, maybe kind of less likely for males to do them.
Yeah, it feels like maybe your family's kind of just propping up the side a bit there.
Going against the mold. Yeah,
Exactly,
there's something in that.
exactly. Yeah, definitely. And I think that honestly, like part of that, like the reason we're doing this is because, you know, I wanted to kind of explore these topics, and myself and, you know, my colleagues have discussed the best way to kind of try and get people, you know, who might not necessarily feel like there's a place for them in these courses to feel like maybe there is. So,
Yeah, I think if you were to go out to the street and ask someone to draw a speech and language therapist, it's going to be a white woman. And I think, there's nothing wrong with all the white women that are speech and language therapists. But it's good to have a mix. It's quite unique circumstance where I'm a white man talking about being within a minority. Like, and it's also quite unique. I don't feel that I've ever been discriminated against, which is a unique minority. Most minorities, I do think that is an experience. But it the same applies in terms of, yeah, being able to see it. And if you can't see it, it's hard to believe you can be it,
Yeah, I completely agree. And honestly, yeah, you saying that threw a little anecdote into my head because whenever I was in primary school, I distinctly remember not I assumed I wasn't allowed to be a teacher because there were no primary school teachers at all of color, and I'd been to two different primary schools. So I was like, I've seen enough primary school teachers now that I know that I'm not allowed that job. Do you know? And it was just an automatic like, nope, that's a door that's shut and that's it. And it seems really like almost like it's dismissive in my brain, like in some way, like I was making a leap. But I when I think about it now, I'm like, okay, actually, you know, I started primary school in like 2000. Do you know what I mean? It was a very different landscape here. And when I think about, you know, the kind of environment that like, you know, that, you know, Ireland was a very different place then, there were very few people of color. So seeing those jobs and like kind of looking at somebody and being like, that could be something I can do is a very important thing. It's very close to my heart. So I genuinely think with even with experiences like yours, you know, it is an unusual circumstance for, you know, a white man to be in the category of minority, but it definitely is one in the sense that like I remember seeing, you know, a few of the guys in the varied allied health courses throughout college, and it was a little bit tougher on some of them more than others, you know, like as in if you were a quiet guy, it can be a little bit difficult. Maybe if you know, were living at home, if you lived in Dublin before and you were living at home and in college every day, like, you know, you didn't have that chance to maybe make friends. Having to push yourself out there a little bit more can be tough.
Yeah, no, definitely. I get that. I think it can be. As I said, having the kind of balance of living with guys and then having the different course experience maybe worked out.
For the
But yeah,
best.
it definitely, if I had done a year of a different course before that, the contrast would have been much more obvious, and I might have started to think, oh, hold on, this isn't what I signed up for. But as I said, I was lucky in that the first personnel in the course were particularly nice and affable.
Definitely. And like, does it feel different? Like, I know you said it didn't really impact you once you were in college and you kind of accepted that that was those were your circumstances. It didn't really make a difference. But now that you're working, are people ever surprised by you, or is it just kind of like something that you forget about now?
I think if ever it has impacted a parent or a teacher, they didn't say it to me.
Yeah, fair.
I think sometimes, I do very much stand out when I'm walking through a baby room or a preschool or whatever. I'm very, very tall as well as being a guy. But no, generally it's a positive thing. Definitely, as in it's a taken as a positive thing, that there's a different person, a new person. Definitely, like I remember noticing with a colleague back in Scotland, we were just comparing our experiences one time over lunch, and something I'd never thought of. I just assumed everyone has the same experiences as I do. And at the end of a lot of my sessions, in primary care, I noticed that parents, particularly dads, but sometimes mums as well, would shake my hand. And I
Oh,
mentioned
that's
this
interesting.
to one of the girls, and she was like, "No one's ever shook my hand. This has
No.
never happened to me." So maybe that is one kind of gender specific
Yeah, that's
behavior.
actually, I think that's a very interesting one actually now, because when I think about it, in training and stuff like that, it was always, literally never, never at the end of a consultation would that happen. Like, I've never heard of that before. So.
I reckon you're talking 3 4 times a week I was getting handshakes, and particularly parents of non-Irish background,
Yeah.
and particularly dads, but yeah, definitely mums as well. So yeah, I suppose that would be one thing I did notice in terms of slightly different treatment. I would be called doctor a lot more than my colleagues were.
Yes. Yeah.
Again, that comes down to the, widely held cultural kind of the
Yeah.
stereotypes that exist there, and I would have to correct that one. But other than that, like, no, I never felt, sometimes myself, I felt that I always wanted to make sure that people didn't feel like, when I was working with very young kids at the start, I was worried that people would feel uncomfortable, but no one ever did, and you just get really used to it, and you get skilled at it, and you get skilled at making people feel at ease, and that you are, your confidence becomes, people feel that and take it on, and there's no worry then,
Yeah, it's a funny one though, because like what you're saying, about even considering the idea that people would be comfortable around you isn't something that a woman, any woman in that circumstance has to do going into any
Sure.
profession with kids. And it's just interesting to think about the idea that, if you were a doctor and you were going into pediatrics, or even if you're going into like, ops and obstetrics and gynecology. You know what I mean? As in, that's a completely valid choice. And it feels like there's an aspect of this where it's like this is a valid choice too, but it's not accepted as one in the same way where, picking maybe an allied health profession that relates to kids might make a lot of guys apprehensive about what their life might look like, or what people might be like with them, or whether people would be worried about them, when obviously there's no reason for that to be the case.
Yeah, I think it is just challenging your preconceptions.
Yes.
Even it's funny, I remember the very first time of a there are a few men that work in baby rooms and toddler rooms around here who are brilliant, and I had seen very, very few men working my time in England and Scotland in those rooms. And the very first time I did here, I was like, that's a bit strange, isn't it? And then I had to catch myself and thinking, well, you're a guy in a profession completely
Yes.
dominated by women. And I had that kind of intrusive thought straight away, going, oh, is that a bit odd? And of course, pretty quickly
That's.
realized, of course it's not. It's brilliant. You have a mix.
I actually really
So.
appreciate you sharing that, because I think it's really important for people to recognize that that will happen to yourself too. You know what I mean? Is it even in that
Absolutely,
moment,
yeah.
it's a surprise. But like, yeah, it's all these things are really ingrained.
They're ingrained, yeah, and you just have to challenge it and almost
Yes.
experience it, and then reassure yourself and go, oh, no, this is a good thing and a normal thing. Yeah, across all those different professions, and not just speech and language therapy. I think if there was just to be a focus on getting more men into speech and language therapy, it's too narrow of a lens. I think
Yeah.
it's child care and professions to do with children, much more broadly.
Definitely, definitely. And also, I suppose, kind of, I feel like allied health has become a bit gendered as well, where it's like physio is considered like the man's allied health in some way. And, as in, you've got other courses where it's like there'll be one guy, maybe in a class. So it's kind of that
Yeah.
idea of it all being like they're not, it doesn't feel like all allied health is made equal.
No, but I do think that comes back to the point we were chatting about earlier about education, about actually
For
what are
sure.
jobs. You know, when I was 17, and you said the words physio to me, and you said, think of a word related to physio, I'd say sport. And sport, I was a guy, I love sport. So obviously, that's an easy connection. If you said speech and language therapist, I don't know what I would have said, maybe hospital or child. And things that are maybe less linked to what most males hear. For me, it was technology, and even though that's a tenuous enough link to the profession, that was the thing that influenced me to go into it.
For sure. And I'm actually even thinking, like, when I was a kid, and you, if you said speech and language therapy, I probably would have thought of elocution.
Yes, yeah, the
So,
name speech and language therapy isn't a very good one. I can't think of a better replacement on the
yeah,
spot, but
fair.
it's not the best title. It's not the best title, you know, because so much of what we do is kind of supporting others through play and through kind of modeling and just empowering others to have those skills to help communication to grow and flourish. Speech and language therapist sounds very, yeah, like you said, to do with the actual physicality of diction.
And I think a part of it as well, maybe I was thinking, you know, just your associations with it as a kid versus mine. I'm just thinking it's a very different way of looking at it in a way. Do you know what I mean? As in elocution kind of comes from that idea that, like, I think speech and language therapy could be perceived as almost like correction in that way, and therefore it's more associated with women.
Maybe there's a link. I remember having a conversation. I don't remember his name now, so I won't. I'm not calling him out here or anything now. But it was the career guidance counselor in my school, and we all would have had like a chat with them. And as I said, the information we got about what all the professions did was very minimal. But I remember mentioning to him, I think I'm going to do speech and language therapy, and he said, oh, I don't think you'd like that. That's just talking about the rain in Spain and being on a train. You know, he very much thought it was elocution. So, and I remember ages later in the middle of the course thinking, well, that's nothing to do with it at all. What was he thinking
It
about?
popped
But
into your
so
head and you're
even
like, this, that hasn't come up.
you know, that kind of was his job
Yes.
you know, guide me there. But yeah, so I think there's maybe a lack of awareness of what the professions actually are about, you know.
For sure. And I'm just curious as well as, you know, going into this course, was this your first time experiencing feeling like a minority, or had you had that experience as a kid, you know, in other ways?
I know you would have been the first, yeah. It
Yeah,
would have
because
been the
it's an
first of
unusual
the,
set of circumstances, I think.
yeah. No, I don't think I ever regarded myself as a minority in college.
Yes.
I think when you're going to interviews, and you're in the workplace, then it becomes a lot more pointed and obvious. And I think whether this is a perception or not, you know, maybe there's a perception that I would be positively discriminated against, in terms of interviews and that. And I do remember one lady in England making a comment about, well, you were an obvious hire because you wouldn't have maternity leave.
Oh,
You know,
wow.
so there are those kind of, now that was just kind of a remark. I don't think that had anything to do with the actual
Oh,
hopefully had
no.
nothing to do with the actual hiring. But yeah, those are the kind of the things maybe that would be in the background there. But I personally never felt that was it had an impact.
Yeah, and do you know, like, can you think of kind of supports that we could put in place to, so I suppose, empower, you know, young men to consider courses like I suppose, like speech and language therapy, other allied health courses, other courses that are more dominated by women. And I do think what you're saying about childcare and young, you know, early kind of learning that stage of growth is something that, you know, young men are kind of encouraged to stay away from rather than go towards.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty big ask to kind of change cultural feelings around gender roles, isn't it? But I think it is linked to that. And I do think just a bit more awareness of what the job is, as I said, not to be repeating myself, but if I was a 16, 17-year-old and I maybe saw some clips of me as a guy now doing some storybook sessions and doing some
Yeah.
stuff with the parents and their kid on the ground and doing some things in a classroom. I could see that and go, oh, that's pretty cool actually, and I could see myself doing that.
Yeah.
So I think it's just actual information about, and then that applies to all other jobs as well.
Definitely, but what you're saying about kind of catching, like I suppose catching people at the age where they're making these decisions, even, past TY, past transition year, when you're kind of starting to really think about what you want to do, even having videos to be able to show, students in class about, this is what this job is like, on the ground floor. This is a person in that job telling you about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose one thing, very different to when I was 16, 17 is the internet.
Yes.
That wasn't an option for me really to go online and Google. We had Windows 2000 and I don't remember it being particularly useful for my future career search. So, I do think there's a lot more information out there now.
Definitely.
If you Google what is a speech and language therapist, or an OT or a radiographer or whatever it might be. But it's almost guiding men and women into that content. So that they, so not to force them into a career choice, but so that they have a fully informed career choice. And one that isn't just the two or three roles like you were saying for yourself that you thought you could do.
Yeah, it's exactly seeing. I suppose there's something, the most powerful thing I suppose we can do is see more people in those roles.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the biggest kind of barrier is just the visual.
Yeah, for sure. And is there, like, I suppose those are all my main questions. Is there anything else that you'd like to say, just, about the topic, about this conversation, or about your experiences?
So I don't know. I have generally. It's never really been something that I thought too much of, certainly throughout college. And people have mentioned it to me more, I think, over the last couple of years. I think there's maybe a little bit more awareness of difference now. The last few years, I think it's
Yeah.
kind of people are more aware of difference and maybe celebrating difference and all of that. So I think it's got wrapped up in that, and I've been asked more questions about it in the last 2 or 3 years than I had in the previous 10.
That's really interesting.
So whether that's part of a culture change or just more part of the start of that, the curiosity developing, I don't know. But I do think as well, like there's that risk, like you want to get the right people into these professions rather than just a gender or a color,
Yes.
as you I'm sure you'll agree, and I do think just because there's a couple of guys in a health center, for example, doesn't mean that the atmosphere is going to be any better.
Yes.
But I have worked and I've chatted with lots of colleagues, and what we do tend to find is if there is a mix of it's more if there's a mix of personalities and a mix of kind of attitudes, and then you get a really healthy dynamic. But then to get that mix of attitudes and that mix of belief, feeling, or that mix of personalities, it often comes with different genders, colors, creeds, and so on. There's one other guy in here in the office in my Ross, and I think we've a really good mix. There's about 8 or 9 women, and lots of different personality types, so it's a
Yeah.
really healthy dynamic here. When I worked in Scotland, there was one guy, Connor, an OT in the office, and again, maybe, oh, sorry, there's a nurse, Ross, and then maybe 15, 16 women. So it definitely has helped. I feel if there's a mix, as I say, first and foremost, of personalities, but then to get that, it might be linked to having a few different, gender types. And in that office in Scotland, we had an OT, Sophia, who came from an Islamic background, Pakistani origin, and that was a really healthy mix as well, just in terms of the conversations that were coming up at lunch. It was just really interesting for me. From a health center point of view, just hadn't had those conversations before.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. And also, even just like it can be a kind of the trickle down effect. One conversation you have in the office with somebody that has an experience that's different to you might impact how you deal with your clients, you know, whether you're sensitive to certain issues. You know, it's that aspect of like of kind of, you know, cultivating an environment where you have multiple personality types, but also if people have different experiences, it's going to contribute to kind of a more wide-ranging environment.
100%. It's like what people say about boardrooms. You know, if you, in terms of groupthink, if you're all really strongly influenced by certain a few strong voices, and then everyone else is agreeing, and there's no real agitators or people trying to say, "Hold on, here's another way of looking at this." So I do think it's really healthy to have that. You know, I remember very early on in college, being maybe an 18, 19-year-old, and having a conversation with a good friend of mine, Katie, who was doing engineering, and she was the only, or maybe one of two girls in our course. And we were noticing slight changes in our personality a little bit. You know, she was saying that her humor was getting a little more coarse. I was noticing I was definitely becoming a bit more empathetic. And again, I'm really conscious not to gender these kind of qualities, but I do think that, again, that it does have an influence on who
It
you are
does. And
around.
like, yeah, there is validity to kind of, you know, those things happening, especially on mass. I think it's more, you know, as in when it comes to gendering those things, when it's one on one, it can be very different. But when you're talking about, you know, you both experiencing environments where you're, you know, another gender is dominating the environment, it is interesting to hear about how that can kind of impact your personality, impact the way you see things or your outlook.
100%. Like, I've never really experienced it while I'm within a team, but I have had colleagues say, "Oh, before you and whoever, another guy joined, we noticed that the atmosphere was getting a little bit toxic." And I know I've male friends who've worked in all male environments and would have said a similar thing. Like, that's not, you know, mixing the genders isn't a guaranteed solution to that. But again, it comes back to that mixing in general is, I think, a good thing, you know.
Exactly. It's about like, yeah, I think creating that diversity will automatically deal with some of those kind of those issues of toxicity which occur in any group where that happens. You know what I mean? It's like it's kind of when things get too insular, that's going to happen anyway. So it makes sense to kind of open it up and try and get people with different experiences on board.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like I said, when you start having conversations about, you know, things that you might never have considered before, you know, for me, when it was with Sophia, it was things around Ramadan and things around headwear and religious garb that I had just never really considered. You know, it just wasn't in my, you know, it wasn't part of my life. And I think when you have conversations, then you become more empathetic and you become more understanding to what you then come across in another context.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a really nice place to leave it, actually. Unless you have something else you want to say.
No, not at all.
Perfect. So thank you so much for
I've kept
sharing
you.
your experiences with me. I really appreciate it, Tom.
No bother. Very happy to chat. And best of luck with all your other conversations. I'm sure they're very interesting.
Thank you.